Hey guys, Jack here, recording in the car in the rain and wanting to welcome you to the last episode of our first year of existence. To those of you who have been with us the whole way, which is a very small percentage of you, but thank you so much. And for everyone who's joined us along the way, we're glad to have you. Our literal one-year anniversary will be this Saturday, and Zach and I have decided that we're going to do a bonus podcast to be released this Saturday. And to take a little break from the sort of Just Hands format, what we want to do is take, you know, any questions you guys might have for us, whether they be poker strategy related, questions about the podcast, about us, whatever it might be, and just send those questions to us on Twitter, at Just Hands Poker, or to our emails, Jack or Zach at JustHandsPoker.com. And we'll answer some of those questions on Saturday, so look out for that. In the meantime, enjoy this episode with our podcast contest winner, Joshua Chase, who participated in our Greg Raymer event back in November. All right, enjoy. Thank you.
Hello, Zach.
Hello, Jack.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. We've got our Just Hands contest grand prize winner, Joshua Chase, on with us today. How are you doing, Joshua?
Good.
For those of you who are new with us and didn't hear about the contest, we had an event with Greg Raymer, and we had a contest that Joshua won, where he sent in some interesting hand histories and was awarded a seat in our game with Greg Raymer. Those hand histories are worth checking out. They're going to be in the blog post for this episode, but we decided it would be more fun to talk about one of the hands that actually happened at the Greg Raymer event. So, Joshua, we're going to have you set up the hand and introduce the opponents sort of as you knew them. So maybe if you had watched any of the footage, you can let us know. You know what you knew at this point about these villains.
All right. Well, I got, first off, I guess I have to say it pays to participate in stuff.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, I knew I was probably one of Peter's three viewers when he was streaming the Just Hands Twitch stream. So I knew a little bit about Peter.
Okay.
Well, for what it's worth, Joshua, I think we've had a fair amount more viewers than that. I believe one time we even went up to 11 or 12. So let's not cut the stream short.
Maybe
so.
It was just like the early one. Maybe the early ones.
Yeah, maybe one of the first ones.
There wasn't that many when I was there, but okay. So I knew a little bit about Peter and a little bit how he thinks about poker. I went in going into the hand. I guess Peter opens the button to six, which I kind of thought was small, just because I think I'd already seen some of the other players raising to eight. So I kind of thought he was just giving himself a good price on any fold equity he might have had. And that's something that you do online. You can get a lot of folds that way. So I kind of didn't think he was super strong to start the hand. And then Rob, he went ahead and called. I really wasn't sure what range he was calling with at this point, but seemed good. He was giving me an even better price. I was probably going to defend anyway. You guys have any questions from there?
Well, I will say, I mean, I think, so did you say what you had?
I've got Jack 8 suited of hearts. Jack 8 of hearts in the big blind.
Yeah, well, I think given Peter's likely button opening range, and what we've seen from Rob, particularly also that he's flatting in the small blind and you have position on him, it's a pretty clear call. The one thing I'll say about Peter's bet is that I think Peter's very likely to use one raise size for his entire range that he's opening pretty much in any seat. I didn't notice if he was raising smaller on the button. He might have been.
I didn't notice any variation either later. I guess Peter didn't play. I didn't have a chance to play with him a whole lot. But it just seemed small. I guess it was early in the night, and it was a little deviation from some of the other players in the game.
Yeah, he's coming from the online background, I think, you know, he did, something feels wrong about opening like 5x, which is understandable.
Yeah.
And in this game, I think opening, you know, more than 5x is probably a mistake, even though stacks were somewhat deep. But yeah, I definitely think Peter's opening pretty wide here. I'm biased. I know that Rob's calling pretty wide here. What was your take on him? Was not necessarily that he was going to be extremely wide, though, is what I'm gauging.
When he called, based on kind of our conversations with him before the event, I kind of got a feel for his level beforehand. So I kind of figured he was kind of the normal player who's going to call with kind of a super wide range there, just trying to hit something and see what happens.
Okay. Yeah, I think that read was pretty spot on. All right. So we've got 18 to the flop, and I'll just spoil it since I know what happened. We've got a flop of 7 of hearts, king of hearts, 6 of hearts. Nice looking flop for our hand.
Yeah. I had the flush draw. I decided to check it just to see if Peter would see bet.
Wait. Flush draw? The flop you said, Jack, was 3 hearts. Was one of them a heart?
Yeah, it's 7 of hearts, king of hearts, 6 of spades.
Okay.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, me too. By the way, to the listeners, we'll post a link. You can look at this hand, too. The entire Greg Raymer event is on YouTube, and we will attach it to this video.
Oh, really? It's on YouTube? Sweet.
It is on YouTube. okay. So, checks to you. You check. I think that's pretty standard. I don't think we necessarily need a donking range here, and I just don't think there's any reason to donk. If Peter bets, then we'll have a decision, likely between raising or calling. And if he checks, then we get a free card. We can semi-bluff on the turn if we decide to. So
yeah, I felt like he'd be c-betting a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think he'll be c-betting a fair amount. I think he maybe c-bets. This isn't necessarily something that you would have wanted to factor into your decision. Mm-hmm. I think Peter's someone who is likely to c-bet somewhat less than, you know, other, you know, opponents of his demographic, you know, being a younger male poker player who seems like he knows what he's doing. Peter's definitely c-betting somewhat less.
Okay.
But that would not necessarily have been your read.
Right.
Yeah, so what was your read, Joshua, at the time? I know it's hard because you then played a whole session with him and then watched what he had. So do your best. What was your impression on him at the time?
In the moment, I did feel like he was going to be c-betting, you know, quite a bit. And after watching some of his streams, I did feel like he was definitely going to be pretty bluffy post-flop when checked to on a lot of boards.
Okay. That
was the impression I got watching him online. So
That's a pretty excellent resource on which to draw on with this read.
Yeah.
So did he c-bet?
Yeah. He c-bet, it looks like 12 at the into, what was it, 18?
Okay.
And I elected to call. I've got 3 to the straight. I've got a flush draw. I just want to see what happened on the turn and see if I would like to see what I can rep on the turn, essentially, if the board changes in my favor.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I hit my card, that would be nice too.
So
yeah, so we've got a couple of things which I think you've sort of pointed out nicely, which are that, you know, one, Peter is going to be pretty wide here, which I'm going to agree with you that he's going to be mostly bluffs, and especially given your read, I think we should think about this in the framework that he's going to be very bluff heavy. And then on the other hand, we don't necessarily have a ton of super strong hands here, but I do think we probably have enough to go ahead and semi-bluff here, and I think I would personally prefer that given how wide he is and the fact that we have Jack high. I think part of the thing about waiting till the turn to represent something is that even though on the turn we're likely to pick up things to represent, we also are maybe giving up the opportunity to convincingly represent some of the things that we would semi-bluff on the flop. Like if we had a hand like 7-6 or mm-hmm. King-6, King-7, which are hands that we, you know, definitely could be holding here in the big blind, I think we'd be very likely to raise at this point in the hand. So, you know, considering that those are going to be a huge part of our, you know, value raising range here, I think it makes sense to go ahead and, you know, and let it rip with this particular hand. I don't necessarily think we want to be raising every single draw here. You know, like if we had a hand like 5-3, I'm not sure that I would be semi-bluffing with that hand. But I think with as a good of a draw as Jack-8 of hearts here, but that still has very, very little showdown value, I'd like to put this into a semi-bluffing range.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, so you said, Joshua, that like your read on Peter that like he's probably going to be bluffing exploitably much here, you know, bluffing too much. So the best way to counter that is, you know, when you have kind of maybe some medium strength value hands or some weaker value hands that you might ordinarily fold if you didn't watch him on the stream before, now you would call. But also part of that exploit is then semi-bluffing a little bit more aggressively. Because if he has more hands than maybe like a normal player or like you should optimally be c-betting in that spot, well, that means he has more hands that he's going to bet and he's going to fold. So you should widen up your semi-bluffing range. So I think ordinarily, even against kind of like a standard opponent, the hand you have is really great to put in a semi-bluffing range for the reasons Jack described. But I think in this hand specifically, it becomes just kind of a mandatory bet. And kind of the reasons you were saying before, like I wanted to see if my hand improved on the turn and what happened, that makes sense, but it's just not going to be your most profitable option. Raising is going to be a little bit higher variance, but in the long run against, you know, Peter's likely range of hands, you're going to make more money from it, even though it's a bit of a higher variance play.
Okay. It might not even be higher variance. Part of the reason it might not be higher variance is because if we expect him to fold a lot here, that's a very low variance outcome. You know, if we call and check again, I think we're expecting to see a lot of bets. And then, you know, we're going to have a larger call to make or a larger raise to make, you know, or potentially fold, which doesn't seem like a very appealing option to me. This is also a point where, since we're out of position, we can take the lead in the hand. You know, because if we call, flop, call, turn, and hit our flush on the river, we can lead out, but I think that's generally very transparent. Likely to be unbalanced towards value by you and almost every player at these stakes.
Right.
And I think Peter's likely to fold. So I just think we're more likely to get value when we hit, if we just go ahead and raise now.
Yeah.
But I think we should also mention stack sizes. So you have 200 behind.
Right.
So with the pot, you know, when you call here, the pot's 42 heading to the turn. It's going to be pretty difficult to get your stack in unless you hit your flush on the turn and get a raise called on the turn.
Okay.
I do think you should be playing some of your draws this way.
Yeah. I think either play is good. I mean, I'm gonna take your analysis, and I feel like it's probably the stronger play to definitely raise here.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you have a hand like 8-5 of diamonds, then I like calling a little bit better, since I think you're more likely to get paid off when you hit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And also, we probably have just maybe too many draws relative to our value hands here to be raising all of our draws, you know, since we're going to be defending pretty wide on the big blind. And we're not going to have... It'd be one thing if we could value raise a hand like ace-king here, but we're not going to have ace-king. We might not even have king-queen.
Yeah, I'm never going to have ace-king.
So our value raises are sort of polarized to two-pair plus.
Right.
All right. Well, as played, you call 12, and we've got 42 in the pot.
So I just kind of want to add, as I called the flop bet, I did notice a slight disgusted look on Peter's face when I watched him as I did that. And that influenced me in this hand a little bit.
Okay, that's important to note.
I did get the impression he was not excited about that call. It wasn't, there was a slight lack of confidence there.
Okay. Well, that, I mean, I think that we should be probably discounting the, you know, the value portion of his range given that read.
Right, right. I wasn't 100% sure what to do with it at the time, but it was something I picked up in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that definitely lends itself towards semi-bluffing the turn somehow. So the turn is the nine of clubs, which it improves your hand. So now we have a combo draw, although you still have jack high.
Right.
You can potentially, you know, represent some additional value hands here. Like, had you called with a hand like 8-10 or 8-5, which I think is likely, or 9-7, 9-6, king 9, pocket 9s, although you might have raised pocket 9s preflop. But you have you still have a significant value range.
Yeah. I thought the 9 did improve my range quite a bit. It gave me enough hands to represent that I could go bet here. And that was kind of my plan when I saw the 9. And then, as well as based on the read, I thought that leading out on the turn was going to get some folds based out on the flop read.
Okay, so you led.
Yeah.
And what did you lead for?
I think it was 21, I think half pot.
Okay. Well, I think a lead is interesting. Here's what I would say about the lead. I think the lead is definitely reasonable considering, you know, the strength of your range at this point versus the strength of his range, especially given your read. You know, so when I say that, I mean, in practice, I think you have many of the strongest hands possible here. And even though he has, you know, some hands that, you know, are stronger than what you could have, like in particular kings, it doesn't make up a large enough portion of like the top of the value range for you to sort of have to check because you're kind of capped out.
Right.
So I think a lead is definitely plausible here. I would prefer a lead if I was pretty sure for whatever reason that Peter was going to be checking back a lot. I think if you're confident Peter is going to be double barreling and you have this read that he's not very strong, then I would prefer check raising.
Right.
So
I definitely agree there. Definitely agree there.
Zach, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I agree. It's just hard to put myself, you know, in Joshua's shoes here just because I know Peter so well. And yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I think based on, like, the reads Joshua has at the time, both leading and check raising, I think, will be positive, you know, EV plays. And I'm not sure I can necessarily say that one is going to be much better than the other in this situation, so.
Mm-hmm. I think I personally like check raising since it gives us an opportunity to get in our whole stack if we hit.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of cards. The beautiful thing about our hand is that pretty much all the scare cards, you know, hit us. You know, we can make the straights and we can make the flushes. So a lot of our check raising range here is only going to be one or the other. So, you know, if he has a stronger hand, I think he's very likely to call us, you know, if we check raise and then jam the river, you know, if he calls our check raise. So I think it's going to be, you know, really easy to get value when we hit our hand with our particular hand.
Yeah, I think the problem with the check raise is just potentially getting blown off our significant amount of equity on the turn. Because I think if we check raise and Peter 3-bet shoves on us, I think we have a pretty straightforward fold. So I think, you know, we're balancing kind of those two things. And you don't think we have a straightforward fold if Peter 3-bets the turn?
Not given the stack sizes. I mean, so the pot's 42. Mm-hmm. So let's say Peter bets 30. You know, we have about 180 behind.
Oh,
if we make it,
sorry,
90.
Well, so then we're never really making it 90. Then we're just shoving if we're not going to fold, right? I had a different stack size in mind. My apologies.
We could make a smaller raise.
Well, I think the point is we're either doing one of two rate sizes. We're shoving or we're making it like in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm thinking like a raise of 75. You know, because then we have like 120 behind. We could definitely fold that. I mean, we're not folding with our particular hand, you know, given that we have, you know, a lot of equity.
So then we'll have other bluffs. Yeah, that we could fold.
And I think the other thing about that bet is now we have, you know, if we put it all in on, I don't like putting it all in on the turn, just because I think that we're likely to just fold out, you know, a lot of, we'll fold out some air, but we can do that later. We could maybe fold out some kings, but I'm not positive that Peter's going to be folding that many kings. Hold on, actually, I don't know. Let me think about this.
I think that my sizing, I was, after looking at the hand after the session, I kind of didn't like my sizings there. And I was, as I knew I wasn't folding out a king, but my read was telling me he didn't have the king. So I think that influenced my sizing as well. But I think with my sizing, he doesn't have a king. Or, I mean, he's not folding a king, even on the river, I think.
Mm. So I think the thing that we need to be, when we're leading here, I think our goal is, you know, we have to think about what we're trying to get to fold. You know, so what are better hands that Peter's likely to play this way that we want to get to fold? I think he's going to have some ace highs that we can just, you know, get to fold with a lead. Although maybe not a ton of ace highs, because I think Peter's going to be checking back some of his ace high hands.
Yeah, I also, like, Joshua's read is that, you know, I guess we have to put ourselves in the position of Joshua. But I think even in Joshua's position, like, even with someone of Peter's demographic, when you get two callers out of the blinds on this flop, like, I think if I was in Joshua's shoes, I'd think Peter is checking back most of his ace highs, even if he is over bluffing this flop. So I don't think he has a lot of ace highs here, just bare kind of ace highs.
Yeah, so we have, you know, we have some queen high hands like queen 8, queen 9, queen 10, queen jack. What I'm getting at here is that I think a big part of what we're hoping to accomplish when we lead the turn is to ultimately have a plan to get Peter to fold his 9x. And I think Peter actually has a good amount of 9x here. Mm-hmm. Many of his hands that have a 9 are going to be hands that are going to want to bluff the flop, whether it's a suited 9 of hearts or 9-8, 9-10, even jack 9, queen 9, I think are all likely bluffs on the flop. So I think the big benefit of leading here is to put pressure on his 9s, because he's going to check back. He's going to check back almost all of his 9x.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we might be able to get him to fold those with a big bet on the river if we miss.
Do you think he would have checked back in this particular spot with the flush draw after C betting?
The flush draw and a 9? Barreled it?
No, definitely not.
No. Because there's not a huge amount of value, you know, in barreling a 9 here, even with a draw. I think you're very unlikely to fold a king. And if you do have a draw, you're probably not folding.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
So I think, you know, what hands might you fold? You know, 7x. You know, I don't even a lot of. There's just he would if he were gonna bet a 9, I think it would have to be because he thought you had more, you know, value, or it would have to be a value bet.
Oh yeah.
I don't think he's getting very much to fold, and I don't think it's a good value bet because I think you have a raising range here, and you know if he bets jack 9 and you raise, that's really a terrible outcome. So yeah, I think he's very likely to check back all of his 9s here.
What would you guys think of a little bit larger lead out size?
Well,
I was thinking I went a little smaller than I should have.
Yeah. I do think that, because when you're leading out, I think you should be very polarized, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think you likely are. In this particular case, you have one of your strongest draws. I think you're also going to be leading out potentially with a hand like 9s, king 9, 9-7, 10-8, maybe 8-5. So some percentage of those value hands you might decide to lead out, and then some percentage of your draws here you might decide to lead out. And I think, you know, I think in a second we should recap, you know, the sort of relative value, or should we recap our discussion about the relative value of leading versus check raising. But when you do lead, I think you're very polarized. So I think you should bet larger. Mm. I think part of it is to give yourself a shot at getting some of his kings to fold, even if that might be unlikely, especially given that some of his weaker kings are draws. But give ourselves a shot at getting a king to fold on this street or the next.
Yeah.
And then also building up a pot, because, you know, about 30-some% of the time, you know, we're going to make a very strong hand when he calls. And, you know, if we can get a big bet called, you know, that's going to make the ramifications of this lead much more profitable. So
that's,
you know,
to
recap some of what we discussed, I'm starting to come around to the lead. Part of why is because I think Peter's going to be checking back a lot here. I think a lot of his bluffs are either going to give up because this is kind of a scary card or have turned a nine. So I think when Peter bets here, he's going to do his best to be balanced. I know Peter. You probably know that from watching the stream. But it's going to be hard not to have, you know, mostly hands that are really not going to want to fold to a check raise. So I think we'll get a lot of the hands we want to fold by bet here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's lower variance, you know, against the hands that are likely to call us down here. And I think if you had sized it a little bit larger, I think it would have been, you know, the optimal play.
Right. I was thinking the same thing, that I should have went larger. That way I could make a much larger river bluff to really sell it.
I almost, given your read, like just even overbetting here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that, well, let's think. What is overbetting trying to accomplish? I think given the read, overbetting doesn't really accomplish much. I think he's rarely folding a king. So I guess, does overbetting get 9x to fold more than like 3/4 pot? If that's the case, like at a significantly higher percentage, then I like the overbet. But I think a near kind of pot size lead with, you know, no history between these two players, I think that's going to accomplish what Joshua wants to accomplish.
I'm thinking a slight overbet just to set us up for a pot size river shove.
To try to get kings to fold
on every
on
river
card.
To get kings to fold on the river.
Got it.
And to put nines into a really tough spot.
Okay. Yeah, I like it.
And that's especially, you know, given the read that Peter's not that strong.
Yeah, I was getting, you know, real. I mean, I'll continue with that read as we get more in the hand, but it was, I think it definitely influenced my bet sizing, because I just, for the lead, the smallish lead on the turn, I think I made that just because it was going to fold out a lot of his range that we were going to plan on folding out on the flop check raise that we discussed, for the same reasons.
Okay. Well, Zach, do you have anything to add before, you know, we move on in the hand?
No, I mean, I still think leading out's best, but kind of to put maximum pressure on a king, you know, I can get behind the pot size, slight overbet sizing.
Mm-hmm.
Peter called, and as he called, he had this very not confident look. As I looked at him, he lowered his head and glanced away. I looked directly at him, at, you know, right after, and he looked real unenthusiastic about that call. And from, I'm looking at it on the video, and it's probably not as pronounced from, because it's not from my point of view, but I mean, it was clear to me that he just wasn't confident at all.
Mm-hmm.
For what it's worth, Peter's kind of a shifty looking dude. So I don't know how much you can take that into account, but
yeah, yeah.
But also, this is important. We're going with your read
at the time, but yeah, that was my read. I actually wasn't sure. I wasn't sure, but I had already, my plan was already to go bet pretty much. So that's what I was doing. And that read kind of reinforced my, gumption to do so.
Right. So the river's an interesting card. The river, we got the eight of clubs. So we made third pair. We had Jack, eight of hearts. The final board is 7, King, 6, 9, 8. So we've got 4 to a straight out on the board. This is, what's so interesting about this card to me is that there's a lot we can represent. You know, obviously, if Peter's holding a king and we bet out here, it's really gross. I feel like, given our read on Peter and the fact that he's called both our bets, you know, this card hits him pretty squarely. Now, we've made third pair, but I think given the fact that Peter called the turn, we can't really feel like we have much showdown value.
No, I thought about check calling, because I did feel like that if I did check to him, he would be bluffing some. but I didn't feel like the 8 was going to be strong enough to call in this particular spot, as well as I was just kind of recapping his body language a little bit as I was thinking about it, and I felt like his body language was consistent with the 9, and that if I was going to get the 9 to fold, I was definitely going to have to continue betting.
Yeah. And I think that's true. When you say you would check call, I do think that, you know, if you check and he bets, you're doing all right against that bet. You can definitely, I think, profitably call, since he'll be betting a lot of his missed flush draws here. And then probably only really be betting, you know, a 10 and some fives for value. But I just think he checks back so many hands that beat you, sort of as you're alluding to, that
right,
we're better off just betting rather than have sort of a maybe break even slightly plus EV call when he does bet and losing when he checks back.
Yeah.
So I think that, to me, the choices are between... The reason I would check is if I just thought Peter had so many, you know, better hands that would call that it just wouldn't even be worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
To bluff. So we've talked about Peter's range sort of loosely. You know, when he bets the flop, just calls the turn. I guess let's try and figure out what his range looks like. It's not a totally easy exercise just because he opened the button, so he's sort of wide to begin with.
Clearly.
Yeah. And then, you know, given the fact that, you know, given our read, I think we can discount hands like, you know, ace, king, king, queen that would likely play this way, but probably wouldn't have exhibited those physical reads.
Right.
So I think in terms of kings he could have, I think he's very likely to have king 10, king 8, king 5,
You think he's opening up? He's opening all his like king five off suits.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. Just wanted to clarify, because you know that's 16 versus 4 combos.
I do think he's likely to check back some of his king 5, king 4, king 3, king deuce on the flop.
Really? See, I would think because he's opening such a wide range, he's going to have so many better candidates to check back, like bottom pair, middle pair, and, you know, certain draws that have some type of showdown value.
Well, I'm a little biased, because I think in a three-way pot, I don't think Peter's betting more than, like, 50% of his range here, maybe a little bit more. But within that 60% of his range, he's going to want to be pretty weighted towards bluffs on the flop.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that between that sort of goal and the fact that he just thinks that, you know, one of these baby kings is just going to play better as a bluff catcher on later streets, I think he's likely to check back a number of his kings. I think knowing Peter, he's just going to want to have some top pair.
Yeah. Also,
in his checking range,
I'm trying to get into Joshua's shoes here, not like knowing Peter and how he likes to balance his range, you know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, I guess against some opponents, we might think that he has all the kings here, but Joshua's watched Peter play, and I think this spot is interesting enough, just, you know, given sort of our understanding of Peter, that rather than maybe try and... Well, I think we should maybe both try and figure out exactly what Josh was thinking, and then also try and make this decision given our information about, you know, how Peter plays, or given what we know about how Peter plays. So before I go on too much more about what Peter's range probably looks like here, Joshua, what were you thinking when you were deciding what to do here?
Well, like I said, I kind of already decided what I was going to do on the turn. I had already decided that I was going to be going bet and going to be representing this board. And so I just decided. And then, you know, like I said, I had the physical read that I felt could be consistent with a 9, and it would make sense that he would call with a 9 potentially. So. Yeah, I went for it. I think I went too small, like on the turn bet, but I think my sizing was influenced somewhat by the read I was getting.
Okay. Well, so I'm actually sort of feeling like when we dig into this a little bit deeper, it's going to be a check to sort of give up. That's my hunch. And so let me ask you a couple sort of probing questions about, you know, how you're thinking about Peter in the moment. Would you think he's likely to fold a hand like 9-8 here?
No.
Okay.
So, not for my sizing. We didn't mention the river sizing, but no, he's not. But if I had bombed it, if I bombed the river, he might fold it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if I had bombed the turn, but no, given as played, no, he's not folding that.
So when I think about Peter's, you know, turn calling range, it's kind of ugly for us. Of his kings, the only king that I'm pretty confident he's going to play this way that doesn't, you know, have a straight or two pair is King Jack. He could have some King 4, you know, King 3, King Deuce here potentially that might fold to a bet. It probably would fold to a bet. But my hunch is that he's not going to have very much King Deuce, King 3, King 4 here. So of his kings, I don't think many of them are very likely to fold. Of his nines, he definitely has 9-8, 9-10, both of which, you know, will definitely call or raise us. He might have 9-5. He could have some ace-9 that might fold, some jack-9, and some queen-9 that might fold. But we're blocking a jack, which is not a good thing here. He also has, I think, definitely basically all jack-10, I would guess, which we're blocking. But I'm not seeing that many hands that we're not already beating that he's folding.
It's really just the kings.
It's some of those kings of which we're blocking, I think, the one that he's clearly playing this way that we beat.
Mm-hmm.
A few nines. But he just has so many hands that got there.
Yeah.
And I think given the fact that we can call when he bets with an 8, I like just checking here. Because we're not going to get blown off our equity.
He's
not
going to
be,
Peter,
you know, value betting us really thinly.
I think there's also times Peter gives up 2 and an 8 is good, which makes Jack 8 a much better candidate to give up on a bluff here than others. You know, like there's going to be, if we're leading the turn like this, Joshua, and we're not going for the check raise with a lot of our draws, based on, you know, all the reasons we discussed before, that means we're going to have a lot of draws here that don't have a pair. So I think that having third pair here is pretty significant and, you know, definitely makes this specific hand one of the ideal candidates for a check, decide, likely fold hand.
Well, I think it's probably a check, decide, likely call hand. Just given how many missed flush draws, I think he's likely to play this way.
And I did feel like he'd be bluffing quite often. So if I checked, it would be to check call.
Hmm. I think it depends on sizing. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
if Peter bombs it, then I think we can definitely fold. If he bets like half pot, I think we definitely have to call. You know, given all the sort of baby flushes, or the baby flushes, the nut flushes, he might play this way, or not flush draws.
I mean, I think he's definitely betting two pair for value here when check two. I don't know. I don't think this card is going to make Peter like overbluff to the point that like we should be calling with this exact hand. I believe it's my turn.
I mean, if you
think
he's going to be betting, if you think he's going to be value betting king 8 and 9-8, then yeah, I don't like it as much.
Yeah, I think he's 100% betting value betting that one check too, as he should. I mean, we'll see. You know, in the in depth, I think it's my turn this week to do the podcast breakdown. But I think that it's he's going to be having these two pair hands, and when getting check two, he should be betting them, and you know, kind of therefore Joshua should be folding. Yeah, folding a hand like that.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I was under the impression that I think we should have been check calling, but having gone through his range and seen how many straights he has, it might already be a fold, and if he is value betting two pair here, then obviously it would be a fold.
But he's got 9-4 in his range too. So can we really be sure his range is as strong as we're saying here?
Well, I don't think his range is necessarily that strong, you know, before he calls the turn.
Yeah.
Right.
But when he calls the turn,
let's reveal.
Peter folded, and he folded the 9-4 of hearts. So there's definitely some hands that you're getting to fold here. So he's got some 9 heart draws, like 9-4, maybe 9-3, maybe 9-deuce. I don't know if he is opening those.
Mm-hmm.
I think he definitely might be. But that's only 3 combos, you know, because most of his other, you know, 9x suiteds, you know, are more than that at this point. His 9-10 of hearts. He obviously doesn't have 9-jack of hearts. Queen-9 of hearts sure is another hand that we could probably get to fold. But we already sort of accounted for that. So I guess the only things we didn't really talk about were like 9-4 of hearts, 9-3 of hearts, which will definitely fold. But I just think there's so many other hands that will call that we shouldn't be stabbing at this pot.
Fair enough.
But what I was going to say is that I think had I had your hand and made the plan you made with the reads you made on the turn, I think I probably would have fired the river. On first glance, I don't feel like I have enough showdown value to win. This is definitely a scary card, and I think I would have probably bet. And I'm really glad we talked about it, because just thinking more about the way our ranges are interacting, I think we have a hand that just wants to check.
Does he ever float the turn bet?
I mean, with draws, many of which got there in some form, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that I'm happy to sort of wait until Zach does the podcast breakdown to decide if we should be calling a river bet.
Right.
Yeah.
But that the floating doesn't necessarily make a lead any better.
So in his shoes, in Peter's shoes, do you guys ever find a fold or find a call?
No, because as we sort of pointed out, he just has so many other hands to call with.
Right.
That he doesn't. You still have plenty of strong hands. Like, you're going to have a lot of hands that got there. Yeah. So no, I definitely don't think he needs to be calling with this hand. Like, he's definitely near the bottom of his range and doesn't have a hand that he would want to bluff with. You know, because, like, I guess the one thing he's really hoping you might have is a missed heart draw that just gave up.
Right.
And so he might decide to bet some of his hearts just because if you check to him, just because he'll need some bluffs and he doesn't have very many other hands. But in terms of what he might bluff raise you with here, I think he's very unlikely to raise you with this particular hand. So, yeah, if I'm him, I definitely don't like. I would just, this has got to be a fold. Of all the hands you have, fold this one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He folded pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just likely Peter kind of knows. It's like, okay, I have a pair, but on this run out, I'm really at the bottom of my range, so.
I think overall you guys both played it well. I mean, I think we've maybe realized something about the river that I wouldn't like it if you did it again. But
right,
overall,
yeah.
I think you guys both played through the hand, you know, in a way that I personally would, you know, sometimes play this hand. I think I would probably be semi-bluffing the flop normally, but definitely with some draws and maybe occasionally with this draw, I'd be calling. And at that point, I really like the way you played the hand, or at least I thought I did.
Yeah.
And then from what's interesting, part of what I actually really like about the way we had this discussion is that you stuck with your physical read of Peter, and I'm glad we had the conversation within that framework,
mm-hmm.
because now that we've revealed what he had, you know, I'm not sure that your read was right. Like, I'm sure he didn't feel like he had, like, a hand that he was ready to take to showdown. But on the other hand, I don't think he was too disappointed when you called on the flop. And on the turn, when you lead half pot into him and he's holding a pair and a flush draw, I don't think he's too disappointed either. I think he knows what to do and is pretty confident that it's going to turn out all right for him. So I think we might have been correct in terms of, you know, taking out the top of his range. You know, I'm not positive, but I think reading the weakness, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what Peter's, you know, emotions are telling him at this, you know, when you call on the flop or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. When you say it like that, it does put it into question what I was observing there. And obviously, yeah, we know the hands.
All right. Well, Joshua, you know, thank you so much. Joshua's from Texas. He traveled all the way to Akron, Ohio to be a part of our event. I hope you had, you know, a great time and that it was, you know, worth the effort of trekking across the country. But it really meant a lot for us, you know, to have you participate in our contest and then make the journey. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah, I did feel like I got value out of the trip. I mean, Yeah, I think I got value. I went in, just played, tried to play my game, and because I mean that's what it was for. It was for coaching, so I wanted, didn't want to do anything too abnormal because that's not what I normally do.
Yeah, I think that's smart. All right. Well, hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. We've got our contest runner up, hopefully coming on the show in the next few weeks. And remember, you can check out the entire Greg Rimmer event on YouTube. Check out the show notes. And remember to look at Joshua's contest-winning hand histories in the blog.
Yeah, thank you for participating, Joshua, and looking forward to holding the next event.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Next time I'll do it in Texas.
Yeah, definitely. When you guys come down, let me know. I'll be around.
Awesome.